Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I'm Ben. We are, as always, joined by our super producer, Noel Team Gallag Brown.
Silent partner, Noel.
Silent partner.
Yeah, mostly. I think he's made an appearance on the show a few times.
Yeah, he's weighed in.
Your other podcast, it's a frequent thing. You have a little conversation with Noel almost every time, right?
Yeah, full disclosure, folks. Noel and I are co-hosts, along with our friend Matt, a friend of Car Stuff as well, on a show called Stuff They Don't Want You to Know.
So if you'd like to hear the voice of the mysterious Noel Brown, please tune in.
And a rich and resounding voice it is.
It definitely is.
All right, Scott, today we're looking at something semi-topical as we record this, right?
Yeah.
So we have done a couple of episodes that touch on things related to this topic. We've looked at a specific rally.
Yes.
And we've looked at specific attempts to build cars like this.
Yeah, we have. And even previous versions of this car, if you want to go that far, really.
Oh, please do. Oh, all the way back to...
Well, I'm the original Batmobile fan. I mean, I think there are a lot of fans in our audience that prefer the original over some of the more modern vehicles, you know, the Tumbler, I guess, and everything in between. Even going back to the one that, when would it have been? Like in the late 80s with Michael Keaton?
Michael Keaton? Yeah. Oh, the really long
Batmobile? Yeah, they're fans of that one too. And I've, you know, you go to Autorama or whatever and you can see versions of this and, you know, various car shows or people have, you know, I think, wasn't that one, there was a prize maybe for that one. You could win that Batmobile, I
yes,
believe,
yeah.
at one point. And that was probably in the mid-90s, if I had to guess, or maybe the early 1990s, when it was really at its peak of popularity.
Yeah, but, I can't remember how that contest went, but I believe you were right, Scott. There was a contest. What was it? Just because it was the 90s, it makes me think of Pepsi points or something.
You know what's funny? I was thinking the same thing. I thought it was somehow associated with like a brand like that, like Pepsi or whoever was a sponsor, you know, a sponsor of that. But I got to say, I'm an original Batmobile fan.
Oh, yeah, you're old school.
You know, the old Futura model that they had, that they created, the Varus creation. But this one that we're talking about today is actually... It's of the newest one, the Tumbler, right? But it's its own thing. It's not exactly like the Batmobile. It's a version of that.
And it doesn't look exactly like the Tumbler version of the Batmobile. The Tumbler version of the Batmobile to which we refer, it comes to us from the most recent Batman trilogy under Christopher Nolan. So Batman Begins, Dark Knight Rises, and another one.
Yeah, and of course there's a video game.
Right.
It's called Arkham Knight, the Arkham Knight game. Mm-hmm. And that's where the name of this vehicle comes from. It's built by a Swedish company.
Right, named Caresto.
Caresto, and then they just call it simply the Caresto Arkham car.
And the reason, there's a tale here about why the team that drives this car, Team Gallag, G-A-L-A-G, there's a reason that they went with this design based on this video game. Now, Scott, you know we have some gamers in the audience, so you guys, ladies and gentlemen, already know what we're talking about. This was not what they originally wanted to do, was it?
No, they had another design in mind, and that was way back in 2014. It was built.
Oh, sure.
It was built. And
it's non-fictional. It's not vaporware.
I won't say that everything was fine with it because the initial intent of this was that it was to race, or not race, it was to participate in the Gumball 3000 rally.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gumball 3000, that's something we've talked about in the past. In 2009, we had a Gumball 3000 episode. If you want to learn about that, you can go back and listen to that one.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the history, the founder, and you know what it's all about. Some of that is evergreen. Some of that's maybe we need to do an update pretty soon. How about
I think
that?
We should. I think we should because the Gumball rally recently occurred.
Yeah, it was pretty recent, I'd say.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe we'll do that.
Spoiler alert.
Maybe it's coming. All right. So anyways, the Gumball 3000 2014 was set to have this Tumbler vehicle, this Batmobile replica, really, that was supposed to run in the event It was built by a company here in the United States, I believe, called Parker Brothers Concepts. And it was out of Florida. And it had a 6.2-liter V8 with about 400 horsepower. And there's you know, speculation, or there were mentions, I guess, that it was created by using photos and clips from the Dark Knight movies, and it became kind of a symbol of well, in this article here that I'm reading, it says it became kind of a symbol of the opulence and ridiculousness that surrounds the Gumball and its associated events. Now,
ooh, shots fired.
This is coming from, I'll tell you where I'm reading from. This is from Jalopnik and an article back in 2014. And I'll tell you, Jalopnik is not a friend of the Gumball Rally.
They are not fans.
They do not like it. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. There's a bunch of reasons that you know, people don't like it. There's a bunch of reasons that people do like it.
But we have to do the update now.
Yeah, I know.
Because we didn't really talk about that in the 2009 episode.
No, there are two sides of the coin here.
Yeah.
I think there's two
for
sides.
Sure.
And it's all in how you look at it, really. Mm-hmm. So this Team Galag, is that how you pronounce it, mm-hmm. I think?
Yeah.
Team Galag, they're out of they're a Saudi Arabian.
Yeah, they're two Saudi Arabian princes are the I guess I hate the poor use of language, but they're the principals of the team.
Oh, you know? Okay.
So they're the head drivers, they're the top guys.
Got it, but there's a team underneath them that's a support team, right?
Right, right.
Okay. So they're having this this vehicle specially built by Parker Brothers Concepts. And I guess they found out along the way that, you know, once the final product was delivered, mm-hmm. which was about a year ahead of time, they realized that it was just inferior quality. It wasn't going to be able to make it in this rally. It wasn't going to be able to hold up to the demands of this rally. And that happens sometimes with custom cars. But what you do then is you fine tune it. You take it back and you say, here's what I don't like about it. Here's what I do like about it. This has to be changed according to the rally rules or, mm-hmm. You know, whether it's, you know, of course, these rallies, the rally that we're talking about goes across continents.
Right.
So you need to take that into account, that you have to adhere to safety standards or whatever is required there. So that might be part of it here as well. But there were, in addition to quality issues, there were also what Team Galag said were all sorts of improprieties on the Parker Brothers' behalf as well. So, okay, and just to give you an idea of where this is going, of course, I said it's from Jalopnik, and they don't like this.
Right.
The title of the article, and I'll censor it.
We are a family show.
I will censor it,
Mr.
but it's not
Beer.
Censored online. It says, organizers say Tumblr Batmobile replica too, let's say, crappy.
Too shifty.
Yeah. To race the Gumball. So that's the article title if you want to look it up. But so here's the charges, I guess, levied against them, although it's not official, not really a court case or anything like that, I don't think. And again, back in 2014, it says, due to the substantial work put into it, the Tumblr can't take part in the Gumball. Parker Brothers Concepts have been given a year to fix the issues that were faced last year, but chose not to do the work until it was too late to make any difference. Can you believe that? They had a year to you know, be shown on a worldwide stage, really. And they didn't do anything. So we've been misled many times, and we're told that progress is being made and chose to put our trust in their word. Unfortunately, even after many conversations regarding the preparation of the Tumblr, they had chosen not to work on it and instead used that crucial time in order to promote themselves using our property. These are strong words, Ben.
Oh, wow.
They are also refusing to hand over the license plates in order to be able to drive the Tumblr legally on the road. We have never dealt with such a lack of professionalism and integrity as we have with these people. We apologize if this disappoints any of you, but trust us, we really tried to get it done for the rally, but they had worked hard and succeeded in preventing us from doing so. So it's like they had something against them, almost like a vendetta, like they decided they weren't going to do it in time, just on purpose. That's according to the Team Galag site. It's crazy. I mean,
it sounds even, like there's more to the story.
Well, even Jalopnik has to admit this. They say the whole situation is a shame, I think, and regardless of how you might feel about the Gumball itself, I thought the Tumblr replica was a great idea and probably a lot of fun to drive. It's a letdown for any spectators that wanted to see it, too. So even Jalopnik gives this one a fair shake.
Right.
Later we'll find there are many other criticisms of the event. But even Jalopnik was saying, you're like, that's a shame because I'd like to see that on the road. It's an interesting idea.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got a vehicle, I guess, that is much more successful. And it was built by that company that we mentioned earlier on called Caresto.
Yes. Caresto started in 1996 by a fellow named Leif Tufison. He has been running this, you know, since the mid 90s. You might hear that they went official in 97. Well, here's what they do. They restore classic cars and then they design and build hot rods.
This is an interesting company. And I think that the founder's story where he came from is also interesting. You mind if I take just a moment and mention just like quick?
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah.
And chime in
because
if
he's got chops.
He really does. Yeah. I mean, since you said it was mid '90s about when this happened, right? But back in his teenage years, this guy he worked rebuilding mopeds, and after a couple of years of rebuilding mopeds, and he decided to start to modify cars. Now remember where he is. He's in Sweden, right?
Right.
So I'm thinking, because the way that it's mentioned here in his bio is that he was modified cars, these slow-moving vehicles that were used by young teenagers. Ooh. Now, do you remember those, what we're talking about?
Yes, it's that whole subculture.
A-tractors.
Yes.
Yeah, the A-tractors that kids that don't have a legal license yet are allowed to drive
on
roads.
That's a cool episode.
It is. It's a Car Stuff episode. And if you go back and search for A-tractors, you'll find it. It's a fascinating subculture and really a unique loophole.
He is a dyed-in-the-wool true believer because he also started modifying cars with speaker systems and stereos as he got older.
Yeah.
But then eventually, in his grown-up life, he began working with Volvo.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. Mid-90s. So 1995, he starts to work with the research and development department in Volvo. And it's kind of like, you know, the idea of, well, it's where they take like the concepts and the ideas and they make them a reality. So they actually build what they're dreaming up.
Right.
At this place. So interesting idea. And he starts along the way, like while he's working at Volvo, he starts to build cars for himself. And that's where this starts to begin. His first built cars, I guess.
And before then, he was with Koenigsegg.
Yeah, that's right. You know what? I forgot to even mention that.
For like 6 years.
Yeah, that's
right. He was developing with them.
I don't know if it was before. Was it before that or was it just after? I think he started with Volvo and then he went on to Koenigsegg. Or am I, if I get that backwards? I don't know.
Time is a watercolor in the rain.
Well, either way, he's got 6 years of experience with Koenigsegg as well. Mm-hmm. And while he was there, he still was, you know, interested in the Volvo cars, of course, because
right. He
builds something that, and this is something that made the rounds on the blogs and, you know, Tumblr pages and everything back, I would say, I can't think of when this was, maybe like mid-2000s.
The aughts?
Yeah, the aughts, I guess. I have a hard time with how to describe the first 10 years of the 2000s.
I'm so fond of calling them the aughts, but it doesn't work. Other people don't buy it.
So mid-2000 aughts,
sure.
I guess we'll say.
Thanks,
he built something called the Volvo T6 Roadster. Mm-hmm. And this is one that it got a lot of press. It got a lot of people to look at it. It's very interesting design, really cool. And matter of fact, not just, you know, the bloggers and everybody thought it was cool. Hot Rod Magazine gave it the Hot Rod of the Year award. So this is a huge award for this
back
guy.
Back in 2004. In 2004.
I'll cut it out.
They had, and it's a great vehicle. It's got a 6-cylinder engine, twin turbochargers, and there's a lot of shared DNA with existing Volvo models. But he built this thing.
And I think we got our answer here because I think that he built that while he was working at Koenigsegg. So I think the answer is that he did Volvo, then Koenigsegg, and
then
while he's at
Carasco.
Koenigsegg, did this Roadster that won, you know, the Hot Rod of the Year, and then decided to jump full on into his own company.
You're absolutely right.
He's going to do this Caresto thing.
You're absolutely right, because Christian von Koenigsegg himself hunted the guy down.
Okay, that's it.
So he started there as a mechanic, became the workshop manager, then product manager, and then finally became like the head of the development department before he left. One thing that's fascinating about Caresto, I think it's super cool when companies are able to do this. They don't want to make a production vehicle with even like a homologation run.
Yeah.
They want to make small batches of super cars or flawlessly restored originals.
And that's accurate. They build very, very few. It's almost it's sort of a boutique idea, only even smaller, I think. It's more like just a builder, really, that you go to and have a
coach builder.
Yeah, project commissioned specifically for you. And again, that's sort of a boutique idea, but not exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the numbers that he's producing are very, very low. Some are special order, for individuals. We'll cover this in just a moment because there's one guy that's come back for at least a couple of cars, a Swede that is also an enthusiast and has a lot of money to spend and some amazing vehicles. So the idea is, though, that they offer special projects, prototype parts, and concepts. And we're talking about cars that look like supercars. They can create a supercar from nothing, from just your idea.
Right.
Everything, all the CNC work, the carbon fiber work, the mechanicals, everything. They build the entire thing. The cars are hand built. Very minimalistic in a lot of cases, but still what they say, you know, they still have a kind of an elegant style and exacting to, customer-specific requirements. Whatever they want is what they get. And this is a very hands-on process between Caresto and the individuals that come to him for these projects. Now, they do have, as you mentioned, a few lines of vehicles, and I'm trying to think of the name of one right now. I'm going to find it. It's the they have a Speedster model. They have I got it right here. The Caresto Sports Rod. That's the one I'm thinking of. The Sports Rod is something that can be a little bit more not production, but small run, small batch car, I guess maybe. But but you can customize that however you want. I read that you can put an electric motor in it. You can put any kind of engine that you want in it at all. You can have the interior customized you want, because they do custom interiors as well. They do parts, as we said, prototype parts. So if you have a specific need for a car that you already have, you can have them fill that need. And they've got a long list of, and I don't even have a printout of this because there's so many, but they showed some examples of, suspension components or interior components and buttons and knobs and, all types of exterior ornamentation and things that people wanted on their specialty vehicle that they were able to create. And not only that, they can do full interiors. Really, every detail is well thought out, and that's what makes them really good at interior work as well.
So let's talk a little bit more specifically about the Arkham car.
Yes.
So the Arkham car, this is an interesting story. So Team Gelog is looking for, they still want this Batmobile. Right.
Still have the dream.
Still have the dream. They're not going to give up because they built one baseball field and not everybody came. So anyone else old enough to appreciate my flawless Kevin Costner reference?
I appreciate it.
Appreciate's a tricky word. It can mean a lot of things. Anyway, point being, they did not give up. And so they went to find another design. And it looks like what they traced it back to is they said, well, we aren't getting along with this company, Parker, and we also have some fundamental concerns about the design, so let's go with a different design, and let's go with a different company. And so here's what Caresto, the folks at Caresto said. They said, we're going to build this, we've got the specs, we've got the CAD parts, let's talk about what you want ornamentation-wise, let's talk about what we need function-wise, and where the best place for us to start would be, they said?
Where?
A Lamborghini Gallardo.
Not a bad place to start, I think.
Right. Yeah, they took the chassis of it and they Frankensteined the heck out of the thing, because what I would love to do if we have time on social media when this podcast comes out is to have a side-by-side picture gallery so that we can see just a factory Gallardo and then the Arkham car.
Dramatically different.
It is so much, especially the wheels.
Yeah, well, they've also stretched it too, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a big car. Mm-hmm. They mentioned, and of course all these measurements are in meters, but I've adjusted that. So, they say it's a huge car with a wheelbase. Now, the wheelbase, remember, this is between the wheels. So, wheel center to wheel center.
Uh-huh.
Is 3.4 meters. That's 11 feet 2 inches in between the wheels. So it's really, really been stretched. And it's also wide. It's 8 feet 2 inches wide or 2.5 meters wide. So this is like it takes up the full lane, basically. And it's an enormous vehicle.
Yeah.
So when you see it, you're impressed by the footprint of the thing.
It also it also keeps that enormous V10 engine.
Oh, yeah, it's a huge V10.
Right.
Well, 560 horsepower, which is what comes in the Gallardo, right?
Yeah.
So it's a big, strong vehicle. I guess it probably needs a big, strong V10 to power this thing, because it is a huge vehicle. But the thing is, though, Ben, I think it's carbon fiber, right?
Yeah, the body is carbon fiber.
So what a blast this thing would be to drive, because it's also lightweight.
Yeah, it's lightweight, so the handling we already know is far superior to the tumbler version.
And when they made it, I mean, it's interesting to see the way they made it. They start out with, I think it looked like a styrofoam mold, over which they laid, I believe it was fiberglass, and all this stuff is then CNC machined down so that it got, the right surface that they were expected out of it. And then they, over top of that then, that was used to create the carbon fiber mold that they then used to create the body. So I'm probably skipping some steps along the way and oversimplifying that, because that is a difficult process.
Has flamethrower exhaust. Flame, just want to throw that in.
Does it really?
Yes.
Now, we see flamethrower exhaust in a lot of hot rods. Mm-hmm. And occasionally we'll see it on, like, maybe some import tuner cars or something, you know, where the people try to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think you're right. It's majority hot rods.
It's a better fit for hot rods. And even some motorcycles, I think, I've seen with flamethrower exhaust, which kind of crazy.
Yeah.
You know, if the exhaust is far enough back, they can do it.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, for the Batmobile, it seems to fit, doesn't it? I mean, we always see the Batmobile with jet engines ablaze at the back, and this makes sense.
Yeah, and the way that it operates, at least to get in and out of the vehicle, it has the entire canopy moves back, and it's on a forward-facing hinge.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
You know, so the entire thing lifts up.
There was an old kit car.
Yeah.
That I think was called the Aztec. I'm pretty sure it was called the Aztec. And I've only seen one of these ever that has that. And that's funny. That's Aztec. I didn't even think of that. That matches up with the Pontiac vehicle.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Are you sure you're not thinking of the Canyonero?
No, not the Canyonero. I'm pretty sure it's an Aztec. And it's a very futuristic looking design, of course, with this big canopy that was like a hydraulic canopy that lifted up. I've seen one in person. If I'm getting the name right, I hope I am. But I've seen only one in person. It was a little bit rough, not finished. It was a gas station here in, it was in Roswell.
Really?
And that's the only one I've ever seen in my life, and I've never seen that one ever again. I don't know if it's just parked in someone's garage or what.
It might be a garage, maybe.
Maybe.
You know, I am envious at times because you live in a part of our city where you're just much more likely to see some exotic cars and to see some Cherry classics.
It seems like that because I'm in a suburb north of the city, and it seems like not where I live by any means, not my neighborhood, but I mean north of there, there's a lot of like farm property and some big estate type homes. And I think a lot of the people that are here in town, like sports figures and, you know, recording artists or whoever is in Atlanta, because Atlanta's a big growing city. It's like 6.5 million people.
Well, everybody heard you moved here.
Well,
it's getting crowded.
It's not so much that event. But in that area, you're kind of close to the mountains. You're close to the big lake, which is Lake Lanier.
Uh-huh.
You've got, you know, some property. You've got, you know, some space to move. You're not constantly, you're not in the city. And I know they have, you know, condos or whatever there as well. But, I think a lot of people have kind of like they have an estate home that's, you know, at the base of the mountains and, and around all that stuff. And they've got these toys and they sometimes have to get them fueled up and they bring them into the gas station where I happen to go. And I see a lot of this stuff or, you know, they bring them to the repair shop that I have to pass every day because they, kind of a specialty shop that fixes everything. And they've got a lot of unique toys there all the time. I've seen cars there that I swear are like 1960s, you know, concept vehicles from auto shows and things. It's amazing what you'll find outside of these little shops.
Wow.
If you get just outside of the city, it's incredible.
If you get just outside of the city,
too many tangents, Ben.
Too many tangents. Well, that's, I think that's an important point that I will tie in.
Oh, good luck.
Yeah. With an incredibly reasonable segue, which is, speaking of a long way, one of the big differences between the Tumblr version and the Tumblr version of the Batmobile and the Arkham car seems to be the ability to drive long distances consistently and comfortably.
Yeah.
So one thing that they hit on in the press releases for the Arkham car are that it includes amenities.
Well, this was built specifically for the Gumball 3000, right?
Yes.
Knowing that they were going to be traveling 3,000 miles across Europe, it needed to be almost like a GT car, like a grand touring car.
Yeah.
In that, you know, it needed to be comfortable as well as, you know, extremely powerful and plus, you know, be able to handle, you know, just that type of punishment that thing was going to get, you know, on that trip, because it's not an easy trip to make.
No.
So it's understandable why they would build in amenities and some comforts along the way. Now, other people that have come to Cresto have had less comfortable rides. There is I'll just mention this right now while we're talking about it. There's a guy named John Olson who has ordered at least a couple of cars from Cresto in the past. He is a skier and car enthusiast from Sweden, and he had a couple of different cars built for the Gumball as well, at least one car built for the Gumball, and it was called the Rebellion R2K. And the Rebellion R2K looks a lot like a 24-hour Le Mans prototype car, but for the road, which is really, really cool. It looks almost identical to that, but it's a street car. Very, very cool. And he had another one built not for the rally, but just for himself, I think. The same guy, John Olsen. Again, Swedish skier. He had something. They used an Audi RS6 vehicle as kind of the base.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an Avant, so a wagon. And he had it created into kind of a DTM car. Now, DTM is the, what is DTM? That is the German Touring Car Masters Series. And they've got a very, low, wide, very aggressive look to them. Mm-hmm. All these DTM cars do. And he wanted this RS6, to be a DTM lookalike car, but with an Avant body. It's very cool. It's an interesting idea. It's got something like, of course, you know, the original has 560 horsepower. They bumped this up. They did modifications to the engine that bumped it up to something like 900 horsepower. So it's a strong, strong vehicle for the street. But, again, this is the second car that he had built for them. And if there are others along the way I missed, I don't know, because they've got a bunch of different vehicles like the Hot Rod Jacob. They've got the Caresto V8 Speedster. Going through my list here, they've got all kind of, I think I mentioned the, oh, what was that other one? I keep forgetting the name of it. The sports rod. He's done a bunch of course, Volvo cars, because that's his base, his heritage, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The XC90, there's a V70 that they've updated. Most of those were cosmetic changes. And then I think maybe one of the coolest ones, if you want to look another one up.
Yeah.
The Caresto XC60 six-wheeler. And this is a crazy idea. I mean, it's an interesting idea, and it was very, very practical, actually, in its purpose. I've got this one highlighted here because I wanted to talk about it for sure.
Uh-huh.
It's a camera car, a photography car. They took a wagon, an XC90.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, an XC60.
Okay.
And they completely cut it all down into, almost like you do like with a rat rod or something, you know, like where you just gut the whole thing, basically. They have fitted it with a flatbed and extra wheel axle. So again, six wheels on this thing. The roof has been heavily reinforced with carbon fiber. There's platforms, both on the flatbed and on the roof, and they're non-slip. There are points to attach, you know, photography equipment, and there's several sets of power outlets on this vehicle.
Hmm.
It's really an interesting idea. If you've ever seen a camera car that they use in Hollywood.
Yeah.
This is like I want to say a hot rod version of it, but it's a slimmed down version. It's not the enormous big vans that they convert,
right,
or, you know, the step side trucks or anything like that. This is, built out of a Volvo wagon, and the car's painted flat black and in a matte finish so that it won't reflect in other cars. It's got caps for the headlights so that those don't, cause any problem. It's really an interesting vehicle. If you want to look it up again, it's called the Caresto XC60 six-wheeler. And, it's an interesting thing. You can see photos of the entire build of this thing, as you can all the other vehicles, including, you know, the Arkham car.
You can get an up-close look at that, including sports rod. One thing specifically that interested me from a tech perspective about the Arkham car was the use of 3D printing.
Hmm.
Right. Specifically, the steering wheel cover. Of course, I don't think we've mentioned this yet. The entire interior has this Batman theme as well. So there's the Batman logo etched into the steering wheel and then on the seats of the vehicles. And they have that nice gold stitching or yellow stitching.
You know, can I ask you a quick question about this? Because you said, were there more 3D printed parts or not? Because I have something I want to mention about the interior that I think is really interesting.
What is it?
It is that it's see-through.
See-through fabric.
Yeah, it is see-through fabric. And I'll read it to you from the description here.
Okay.
This is interesting. The inside of the car, driver and passenger can enjoy. Oh, you know what? I should tell you up front. This is a translation of the Swedish site. So,
So
if I read this and it sounds a little weird, it's because of the translation.
All right.
Inside the car, the driver and the passenger can enjoy the interior in a combination of black soft leather and see-through fabric, all kept together by golden stitches. And the purpose behind that is that when you open the doors, the interior lights up in the seats, floors, and the pedals when the cockpit opens. So all this is, electrically operated, that when you open the doors, the whole thing is alight, including the seats.
And you can see that in pictures of the interior, especially the pedals and the dash, because there are these orange pads. Well, I have some questions for you about this car. First, would you drive it?
Would I drive it
for a long distance? Would you drive it for a rally?
You know what? this car would garner so much attention that I would be uncomfortable driving it. I like driving something unusual and a little different, you know, right. Like maybe a British sports car around.
But you'd be pulled over by people who just wanted to talk to you.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Yeah. But I think that would wear thin. I think that, you know, for a rally, sure. You know, for this gumball rally, sure. That's exactly what they're going for. They're going for this, you know, the flash, right?
Mm-hmm.
The style.
Right.
But I think that outside of that, I wouldn't drive it. I don't think it would be, of course, not a daily driver, but even on a weekend, you know, it might be just a little too much for me.
Mm.
What do you think? Would you drive it?
I'd have to give it a go. At least once.
Sure.
If for nothing more than the photo opportunities.
But would you want to drive it all the way across Europe in a rally?
See, that's where I'm still kind of on the fence, Scott, because if you look at it, its profile is super low. Mm-hmm. It's still, what they did was they put these 26-inch wheels on a heavily modified. Well, we can't even call it modified.
No.
On a pretty much new vehicle based on the Lamborghini, but it's already so low slung that when you sit in, I almost want to call it a cockpit, when you sit in the driver's seat, those wheels are going to be eye level. And that, I want to say that will help with handling, and the top speed's in excess of 200 miles per hour, but I don't know, man. I don't know if I would.
You're right about the handle. I mean, if it's an extremely low center of gravity,
yeah.
That's going to help, of course.
Yeah.
I think there's benefit to be able to see where the wheels are when you're cornering in a car like this because it's so big.
Sure.
It's enormous in size. That's
another thing. It's kind of big.
Well, that dimension that I mentioned, you know, the 11 feet 2 inches between the wheels, that doesn't account for overhang on the front or the back. I don't know how much – I'm trying to
– Right. That's not a tip to tail.
No,
nose to tail.
No. And, you know, that's – to be honest, that's not a whole lot longer, really. I mean,
no.
There's – I'm trying to find a photo of it here right now, but I don't have one. How much is in front of those wheels and how much is in back of those wheels?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure. I don't remember. I think the back wheels are almost right at the back of the vehicle, to be
yeah,
fair.
Yeah, where they're located very close to the end.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm gonna change my answer, Scott, and I'm gonna say yes, I would at least give it a shot driving across Europe. That's one of those opportunities that when presented, must be accepted. As Marlon Brando said, an offer you can't refuse.
I think you're right. I think that, you know, for something like that, and that's kind of what's expected out of that thing anyway, out of that rally.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good fit. But if you're just a guy that's decided to take a road trip across Europe in this on his own, you might get some raised eyebrows. I mean, but people are going to think it's cool. It's definitely an interesting-looking vehicle, and it's well done. It's well executed.
Yeah.
It looks great.
It's almost more a work of art than it is a viable vehicle for most people.
I feel the same way, that, you know, Team Galag is going to put it in a showroom somewhere, or maybe even, you know, take it to a museum,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. You know, it's more going to be on display than it is driven, probably.
And it might be added to another... you know, it might be just the newest addition in some treasure trove of cars. Because as we know, Team Galag is from a part of the world where there are some stunning and astonishing car collections.
Yeah, some collections that range into the hundreds, if not thousands, of vehicles.
So many of which are custom.
It is a possibility that this thing will either be sold or traded, or it could already be part of a big collection. We don't know.
So Team Galag, Caresto. If you are listening, hello, it's your friends over at Car Stuff. We'd love to hear more about your collections of cars.
And an opportunity to drive it.
Oh, yeah. Well, Scott.
Why not? If it's going to be stateside ever.
Yeah.
You know, maybe just send a note our way.
Well, you're the more responsible of our duo. listeners may be interested to hear that off air for several years now, I've found the comparison. Scott, you're kind of the Walter White, and I'm sort of the Jesse Pinkman of this endeavor.
Oh, I'm uncomfortable with this comparison.
but all to say, though, if there's going to be
Wait a minute. I'm just putting this together now. What does that really mean?
Okay, yeah. Moving on. Moving on. We can't spoil the show for those folks. All right. I would, in all honesty, though, I would love to take a swing at driving something like that. Can you imagine just getting out on an open track or getting out on the salt flats?
Oh, yeah. That'd be fun. I guess where there's no curbs to worry about, no pressure from onlookers.
No pedestrians, no civilians in cars, because that's another thing. They have taken this amazing vehicle out on public roads in Europe. So this is a vehicle that is a beast, you know, and it can reach, again, in excess of 202 miles.
Well, you don't have to go that fast, Ben.
Oh, yeah, okay, sure. In theory, you don't have to go that fast.
You have to temper yourself. You have to rein it in. Rein it in.
All right. Well,
but I see what you mean. It's got great potential. It's just that maybe on the European public roads, it's not the greatest place to exploit that potential.
Especially considering how European law enforcement looks at the Gumball Rally.
Well, yeah, okay. That's the other thing is that you may be tempted to say Autobahn, right? Because everybody's going to say take it to the Autobahn and let it go. But they're hamstringing that. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the best way to say it. And we'll maybe touch on that later at some point.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think we should touch on that in our update on the Gumball 3000.
Boy, we're really promising this now. We better come through.
Yeah, we better not break our word.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Well, before we get to that, Scott, we have something that's been a long time in coming. And longtime listeners, you may recognize the return of this segment, Listener Mail.
All right, Ben, we've got a letter here that comes from Sam T. This comes from the end of April of this year. That's unusual for us, right, to get to a note that early. But
yeah, what happened?
And actually, by the time this airs, it'll be a while, actually, before the answer comes. But sorry about that, Sam. But anyways, here's the note.
Yeah.
I recently started listening to your show on my previous mundane daily commute. I got all the way through the car battery episode and was curious about the concrete floor myth. Growing up, I've always been told never set a car battery down on a concrete floor because it will kill a battery.
I've
never really questioned it, but your episode got me thinking. Will placing a car battery on a concrete floor kill it? And if so, how? Thanks so much for all you do, Sam.
Interesting. Oh, okay, thanks, Sam. For writing,
so,
Sam.
Yeah, we appreciate the note. And that myth has been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I mean, a really long time. And I found the answer. I didn't know the answer myself, so I had to look it up. So I went to the greatest source available to me right now, which is Google, and looked at many, many different places.
Uh-huh.
And found a few different theories about this, but here's the best one, the best answer, I think. And this comes from a place called Ask the Experts.
Mm-hmm.
And the author is Dan Fink. So if you want to point fingers on this one, go back to Dan Fink. But here's the answer that Dan gives. The short answer is that letting modern batteries sit on a concrete floor does not harm or discharge them in any way, but here's the critical point, is that the legend is historically based on fact.
Mm-hmm.
The first lead-acid batteries consisted of glass cells that were enclosed in tar-lined wooden boxes. So that's a lot different than what we have now, right?
Yeah.
A lot different.
Yeah.
A damp concrete floor would eventually cause the wood to swell, breaking the glass inside. So that makes perfect sense.
That does. And that also, for a time, car batteries were encased in hard rubber.
Yeah. Oh, that's coming up. The Edison cell. Which is the nickel iron battery. This preceded the rubber case battery that we're talking about, was encased in steel.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this Edison cell encased in steel. And the problem was that, you know, those that weren't isolated in crates would discharge on concrete easily as well. Later the cases used these kind of, as you mentioned, Ben, these primitive hardened rubber.
Yeah.
Which was a little bit more porous and it could contain lots of carbon as well. So a moist concrete floor combined with the carbon in the battery could cause or create an electrical current between the cells, which would in turn discharge them. So also, you know, right up to that point, we're still talking about batteries that could be discharged on concrete. So
yeah.
This is like three different generations of battery so far. Where
it
was true, yeah. So, but here we are in the modern day and this is where it varies. It's not a problem with modern batteries anymore. You can put them on a hard concrete floor and be perfectly fine. They're encased in hard plastic shells right now. And in fact, concrete is actually generally an excellent surface to place a battery on now because it keeps it nice and cool. If it's a hot garage or whatever, this helps to kind of mitigate that heat that's in the air, keeps it at more of a stable temperature. I know that it warms up as well, but not quite as much. And of course, there's no problem with discharging the cells on a battery that has a hard plastic shell like they do now. So you're perfectly fine in storing it on a concrete floor now, mm-hmm. as long as you're not storing a battery that comes from some antique car that is one of these older Edison cells, or, you know, the hard rubber
or
shells.
God forbid, wood.
Yeah, if you have that
glass,
that tar-lined wooden box, you know, with glass cells, which I mean, there's probably some pre-war cars out there that have that, and of course, those guys should never put those on a concrete floor.
Uh-huh.
But isn't that interesting? That's a, I guess the long answer to that whole thing. I mean, I could have just said, you know, you can do it now, it's fine, but I think that's fascinating that, you know, there were three generations of batteries before we got to the hard plastic that was absolutely
once
true.
Upon a time. And yeah. And then also, Sam, in an addendum to that, we do have to point out that if you put a car battery, modern or ancient, just on a couple of 2x4s in your garage, it's not going to hurt it by any means.
No, and that's what most people do just for safety, because they think they remember that. And I'll tell you why I think that happens is because they probably have either parents that are old enough or grandparents that are old enough to remember the old rubber encased cells, or even maybe in some cases the Edison cells. I don't know, possibly, but it's probably just something that's been passed down that you don't put it on the concrete floor in the garage, and that's why. You put it on these 2x4s, and you're going to be fine. But that is a myth that should soon be ending.
Yeah, or who knows, maybe it will just continue into the future, and then hundreds of years from now, people in autonomous all-electric cars will just refuse to put those batteries on the floor.
Yeah, that's a good point. What do you do if you know, you've got your Tesla battery pack? You have to put it on a bunch of 2x4s in the garage? I guess you could throw it right on the concrete.
Surely Tesla makes custom 2x4s.
and are they going to be encased in hard plastic? If they're not, what if they're encased in rubber or something similar to that? There's a chance. So, you know, this applies to batteries we have now. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good lesson. So tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Yeah. Kill the myth.
Tell your friends, kill the myth. Or encourage it and get into the 2x4 business.
I like the way you think, Ben.
Yeah, in terms of horrible advice.
What's a potential moneymaker?
Well, anyhow, folks, we're going to get out of here. We hope that you enjoyed this episode. Go ahead and take a look, if you have a second, at the Arkham car. We want to know your thoughts.
Yeah, look through the gallery at the Caresto site. Mm-hmm. The gallery has all of the vehicles, and there's more than a dozen.
Right.
And you can also look at the specialty parts that I mentioned. You can also look at the interiors that I mentioned. It's really a fascinating place.
And their hot rods are beautiful.
They really are. Some of them are really, really cool. I like what they do there.
Mm-hmm. And let us know what you think about this car. And I'm also interested. This might be a dangerous question to ask, Scott. But I'm also interested in hearing what you folks think about spending an amount of money. This has to be a lot of money. We publicly don't know how much money they spent. But Team Galag, that is.
Oh, okay.
But between the two different versions of the Batmobile, how much money do you think they spent? Oh. And do you think that you would spend that much money if it was available to you?
Yeah, really think about it, too, because we're talking about two custom-built cars, you know, from scratch.
Yeah.
And the second one, we know used a Lamborghini Gallardo as a base.
Right.
So that tells you right there, how much they spent for just that. And then all the R&D that goes along with that, you know, to stretch it and to modify it. Oh, my gosh, Ben. I don't even know if I want to wager a guess, but I'd love to hear what our listeners have to say.
Maybe they got a deal, like a Scout Mob or something, or Groupon.
Possibly, yeah.
On custom cars. Yes, do let us know what you think. If you'd like to learn more about the origin of the Gumball Rally, as well as the evolution of the Batmobile, check out our website, carstuffshow.com, where you can hear our podcast on that and many other subjects. All the way back to our early days when we had a slightly different name.
Yeah, we were High Speed Stuff.
And if you listen to those, be kind.
Man, was that 2007 or 2008? I think it was 2008. We're 8 years on at this point.
Wow.
It's a long time.
You know, it is. It doesn't feel like 8 years.
No, it doesn't. But if you go back and listen to the early ones, it's a slightly different format almost.
For sure. Yeah.
It feels different.
Yeah. But we can say that the Gumball Rally and the Batmobile episodes are pretty good. Objectively, they're pretty good.
I like them.
Yeah. I re-listened to one to make sure that I had all my facts straight.
Make sure it stands up.
Yeah, right. Make sure it stands up before we mention it on air. And speaking of on air, we'd like to thank Sam for writing in and helping us explore the history of the car battery concrete myth, or what was once true and is now a myth. If you have a car myth you'd like us to take a look at, a suggestion for an upcoming episode, or a weird story about someone you met during the Gumball Rally, we'd love to hear it. You can email us directly at
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.